There's no life for me. There's only work. Hello, everyone. My name is Nicole, and welcome to She's the Barista. As a lot of people that work in the coffee industry, today's guest started in coffee many years ago as an opportunity to earn some money to finance her studies. She worked in a coffee shop during her summer break, and instead of staying 3 months, she actually stayed for 3 years. This is where she started learning latte art. She taught herself how to draw pictures in milk by watching YouTube tutorials, and a couple of months later, her competition career started. Her first application was not submitted by herself, so she kind of got thrown into this world. She gave it a try, and she was fascinated by the learning experience. She has worked as a barista, a shop manager, and a trainer, and has become world famous as the first ever female world barista champion. Here are some of her titles. She won the Polish Latte Art Championship in 2014, 15, 16 and 18. She won the Polish Barista Championship in 2015, 16 and 18. She also won the Polish Coffee and Good Spirits Championship in 2019 and she won London Coffee Masters in 2018. In the World Latte Art Championship, she placed third in 2017 and fifth in 2018. She placed third in the World Coffee and Good Spirits Championship in 2019. And, of course, she won the World Barista Championship in 2018. Oh boy, I think I'm losing my voice over all of this, but even in this crazy year, she competed again. By now, I think we all know who I am talking about, and I am very, very, very excited to meet her. Welcome, Agnieszka Ojewska.
Hello.
Hello. At the start of the podcast, I said a quote from you, and I'm going to say that again, and I found it online, and you gave this in an interview 2 weeks after you won the World Barista Championship in Amsterdam. And this quote is, "There is no life for me, there is only work." I think that shows a lot about the way how serious you take your job, but it also sounds a little bit scary. Can you explain this quote and what it means to you, or what it did mean at the time? Because I'm guessing it was crazy times back then.
Yeah, well, that year 2018 was pretty crazy, and I used to have a coffee shop up till 2018. And 2017, and in 2017, like starting from January, I started to work as a freelance barista. And everybody that ever choose to have a career like that, you know that if you don't work, you just don't earn money, and basically you have to look for the jobs, for the events, and everything that actually you can make you survive from month to month. So 2017. Was trainings in the morning, like for people or like consultancy projects, and in the evening you were kind of thinking of what to do next, where to look for another job, how to improve yourself to be a better trainer or a better barista, and what's next. So the thing is that since 2017 it was like 24 hours a day of work, and in 2018 I was having my 30th birthday, and I decided that this will be maybe the last year of competing, because I should finally grow up and start playing. So that was the idea in December, but it didn't work out as you might know. So then I decided to compete in all of the competitions in 2018. So I was supposed to do latte art, barista, coffee and good spirits, brewers, coffee masters in London, coffee masters in New York, and then also a competition in Seoul in November. So this was the plan, to do like all of them. I almost did that. I did competed in latte art. I did competed in barista. I did competed in coffee and good spirits. I placed second in 2018 in Poland. I did the coffee masters in London. I didn't did the coffee masters in New York because of the World Latte Art Championship. And I almost did Brewers, but Brewers was a week after
Oh
Amsterdam.
God.
So I was just too tired to do that, and I just gave up, and I didn't have strength after the crazy 4 days in Amsterdam. And 2 weeks after Amsterdam, everything went even more crazy. So I was working a lot, but just the moment I get off stage in Amsterdam, like my phone was ringing all the time with all the different type of proposals, contracts, corporations. And so at this time, it was only work. I didn't have a lot of private life. It
And
changed.
that, and
Thank God,
yeah,
it changed a little
but it
bit.
kept on going like this for quite a while, didn't it?
Yeah, like
Mm.
14
Oh my
months.
God, that's a high level of stress.
I actually destroyed you. When you live like that and you work this much, you kind of destroy your body and destroy your mind. So I was a wreck of a person at a certain point, but now it's getting better, especially now when I have a 3 months of forced
That's
kind of
very true,
vacation. So
yeah.
it's pretty nice.
Agnieszka, before we dive into your competition career, because obviously that's outstanding, I would like to talk a little bit about your life before coffee, because I've heard that as when you were growing up and as a child, you always wanted to become a football player.
Yes.
And I would like to ask you if you can tell us a little bit about your childhood and why didn't you pursue a career in football instead?
Well, when I have a brother, and my brother is 2 years older, and he was always into cars, and he didn't get a lot of sports when he was a kid. A very sporty family, so I don't know how it happened, but I started to watch one day football. It was a Euro 96 in England, and I started to watch the game, and I kind of liked that. And then I watched another one and another one. And of course, the boys outside of home were playing football, so I was playing with them. And I was the only one. Even my dad doesn't like football, so this was even more weird. But I was the kid that liked to be active, and my brother was totally opposite. And I think I just have a good friends that we played like every day for 6, 7 hours. But I didn't go into that career because at a certain point when you give too much to the game, and the same as with the coffee competitions, like you can get injured, and I broke my leg and I broke my arm, and my mom started to be worried about it. So she kind of forbid me to play with the boys. So I switched to tennis, then I switched to table tennis, and I was still active, but football was more into like getting into style of how you manage the club, how it actually works behind the scene. So as a kid, I wasn't very skinny, and I didn't have a good I was a fat kid, so getting into professional sport was always a bigger problem. Because it's I was the kid, and still I am the kid that like to eat chips and ice creams all the time. So it's very difficult to get into very good shape when you do that.
I mean, who doesn't?
But I did have a yeah well Ben and Jerry's are one of my biggest
Yeah, I
weaknesses.
do understand that though. So you found a way to still follow this dream, but in a different aspect, right?
I started to be a great fan of Juventus Turin. I cannot even explain how that happened. I was just at the very beginning of my like football interest. I was l watching almost all the games, and the first time I saw Juventus playing, and it was the great Juventus of Zinedine Zidane, Didier Deschamps, Alessandro Del Piero, Inzaghi, Edgar Davids, Buffon, Montero, Tacchinardi, Conte. There was a lot of important names in this club. And the thing is that the way they played was totally awesome for me, and I started follow them. I started to play video games with football, and when you do that, you start to, get that, the transfers. Then there is that you have to manage clubs in a financial way. So I was getting a little bit more into that by playing video games and still watching it. So it was
And then
pretty cool.
you decided to study, and you studied economics, right? After school.
Yes, yeah, because this was the plan. If I'm not gonna play if I'm not gonna play football, I maybe will start to
I
manage
mean, that's very smart.
one day. So this was the well, yeah. This was the funny thing is that we don't have studies that will teach you into this kind of area in Poland. But I went to education fair, and there was a university in UK. And they actually did have the course called football management, and there was a possibility of having a scholarship, so they will actually pay the fee of the studies if you study 1 year in Poland and get like a
Degree,
certain results, and they will pay they will pay your fee. So I was like, so this was the plan. So I was supposed to study 1 year in Poland and then go to UK to study that, but in the
because
meantime everything
obviously
changed.
whilst you were studying in the in Poland, you kind of like had to still worry about money, and this is why you started a job in a coffee shop in your summer break, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, the thing is that I wasn't like my parents were very strict about stuff like if you're studying in like this daily routine. You study and this is your main focus and we're gonna like pay your living and but during summer my dad was like you're not gonna spend your summer on a couch so
Fair
you have
point.
to go to work so it was more like that.
And then you worked in a coffee shop, which more was more a coffee chain, right? So it wasn't specialty coffee, it was just a normal coffee shop.
Yeah, at this point we didn't even have
True.
specialty coffee in Poland. I think there was like two coffee shops. Only I think it was only two, and it was this chain was the chain that was actually winning all the national competitions because they were going into more of the quality side. As a chain at this point they were actually having very strict procedures and they had like a very nice quality coffee. So a lot of people were still remember that chain from having good standards of teaching people and good standards of producing. Of course, after when I was leaving already, it was becoming more like a kind of a big chain, and the quality went down. But when I started, they had three top places in a Polish Barista Championship 2 years in a row, so they
And
were
that
pretty good.
and when you started there, you started teaching yourself latte art, right? With by like watching videos and everything like this. And I read in an interview that your co-workers that you worked with at that time weren't actually so happy about that because they thought if you do latte art,
No.
then they have to do latte art. And is that true?
Yeah, like it's I was at the very beginning the nice thing about the work was just getting the money and then I started to see that there is like if I pour in a certain way there is like something happening on the phone and then I saw a guy because we could exchange people from different coffee shops and there was a guy from a different coffee shop that has a shift in here and he already do that. And he showed the girls a teddy bear and a Rosetta, and I was like, yeah. So he's like showing off. So I didn't at the beginning I wasn't even like I wasn't even getting it as a serious thing. And then I started to see that something is happening, and then I started to look for it in the videos. And of course, I started to do some hearts and teddy bears, and maybe Rosetta wasn't my thing at the very beginning. It's still one of the most difficult patterns for me. But yeah, the coworkers were like, if you will do that, and people will love it, they will force us to know it as well, and we don't want to do it, because like you're not getting extra pay because you
So
have
you
more
actually,
skills.
yeah,
So
so you
they were a
actually
little
were
bit
working in
against
a
it.
team that didn't want you to become better. Like, no, because then
No,
they
not
would have
really.
to step
I
up.
mean, you. Yeah, you needed to be
Yeah.
fast. That was the thing. Like, because I was working in a
Yeah,
train
okay.
station. So, it's like a lot of coffees and everybody's late for the train. So playing with, like, patterns and all that bullshit. Like, just get the coffee as fast as possible out. So this was the main thing. And, like, don't play with the,
Was
drawings and
it
all that stuff. So
very
this was the main focus.
discouraging for you that they like you, that you didn't get any support?
No, I didn't give a fuck about that. I'm sorry for the word, but that was that's how my brain works. If I want to learn some skill and I have the possibility to practice, and for me it wasn't slower or anything like that. It's like
Yeah, just learn how to
I'm
do
just
it
doing it,
fast,
and
I guess.
that's it. So it was. Yeah, that's the thing. So I was like, I wasn't very, like, sad about it or discouraged. The other guy from the guy that showed it for the first time. He was coming to that coffee shop from time to time when he was going by train to his parents, and he was giving tips and he was checking how I'm doing. So this was like we worked in two different places, but we kind of starting to,
Support, yeah.
cheer each other
And I
up.
mean, it worked out for you because you're the manager of the shop or your boss at that time. She or he, I'm not quite sure who it was. She
She, she,
applied
she.
in your name
Yeah.
to one of those internal competitions that this company had, and this and you had no clue about it. And this was the
Yeah,
first
that's
time
the.
that you were actually faced with a competitive situation. How was that for you? I imagine if someone just puts me on a competition stage, I'd be like, oh.
Well, at the beginning, I was like, because there was an email announcing that there is this competition, and I was like, and they were like, so maybe you should go, and I'm like, no, I worked for 3 months, so I was like, no, it's like too early, and I don't know anything, so it's like I'm just gonna go there and embarrass myself. But in the end, she sent the application, and then they received that yes, of course I can come, and they were paying for the ticket, so basically I could train in a shop, so there was no cost for me. And I was like, at first I was like, no, I'm not going, I'm not gonna do it. Like, I'm not a stage person. I'm a little bit of an introvert. So being on stage is always a challenge. But then the other guy came and he was like seeing that I'm going, and we started to practice together. And of course, everybody competing for the first time, I believe, has this weird feeling that I'm gonna crush it. I'm gonna like be better than anybody else at certain point. And I had it, of course, I had the feeling that yes, I'm gonna maybe not win it, but I will be in the top three and I will go for the nationals, and I will be like, I will be this, a golden child of coffee, which of course didn't happen. But this was a good lesson. And what I liked about that is not that I felt good in the competition, but how much I learned during the process, this was something really encouraging, that I wasn't just making those patterns, because this was the latter competition I was taking part. I wasn't just doing the patterns, I was understanding how they happened. So I was controlling more than just doing. After that, after this internal competition, I was just getting better and better, and I could control the size of a heart, the style of a heart, even could make a pretty decent rosetta. So this was pretty cool. And just being on stage, just it wasn't even a stage. We were doing it in a training center, so it actually felt like in one of those company meetings. Then there is like 10 boys of, they just keep talking nice stuff about themselves because they know each other, and you're the only one that nobody knows. And so it wasn't scary, but of course there was always a small disappointment of like not winning it. But I guess that I was just stubborn enough to keep doing what I started to like, which was
And I
pretty
think you
nice.
started to understand because before that, you didn't really have a focus on coffee quality and taste. And I think that also was a gateway for you to
Yeah.
understand specialty coffee a little bit better.
Yes. You know that there was at the same time we had the Latte Art preliminary and this small competition, and then there was also the barista competition. And I must admit that the first time I was buying a different type of coffee, and I wanted to check it with one of my friends. I really thought that if I will adjust the grinder to the coffee I have in the grinder and then just put the other one, it's going to be the same. I was completely sure that doesn't matter what kind of coffee I'm going, because they didn't teach us that you have to change the grind setting if you change the coffee. So what we did, we just exchanged the coffees with the same grind setting, and we thought that the espresso was going to be like, brewing in a proper way. And we put the new coffee, we grind it, and then we extracted it, and it was like 6 seconds faster than the other one. And it was like, what? Why? It's coffee. Like, shouldn't it be the same? And then we started to like realize that, okay, different coffees extract in a different way, and they can actually taste in a different way. So this was the competition was the beginning of like getting deeper, not only with the milk techniques, but also like with the different type of coffees, different extractions. And we even stayed after shifts and were doing like small cuppings, like very unprofessional, but still cuppings to get to know different coffees, which was pretty awesome because I started to find people in my job that were actually wanting to do it. At the beginning, they were so against it, but after a while, they were actually, also buying different coffees, bringing it from a different trips, and we get the small, maybe not community, but the small group of people getting excited of what that coffee is actually not just the coffee we have in the coffee shop, which was a blend of Arabica and Robusta, so you know how it
Oh,
goes.
I remember how I started in coffee. It was in a small coffee shop with, I mean, we did have a good La Mazzocolinera, and we had Maza grinders, which were the best at that time with the dosing chambers, and we had Illy, and we
Mother
had
super jolly.
Illy coffee, and I mean that was like 12 years ago, and that was it. That was the best coffee you could have in the whole city where I grew up. And it was like, yeah, things have changed a lot and radically, but that was still that's still our beginnings, and I think that's how we all started. Let's take a little bit of jump because obviously you learned a lot during this time, and 3 years after you started working in coffee, you opened your first own coffee shop with a partner, right?
Yes, this was the same guy that
So you
actually
already
showed me
knew
the
him,
Latte Art for
and
the first
it
time.
was a small shop in a basement, and you probably learned so much in the recent time, and probably wanted to do everything different but the shop that you were working in before. And obviously you've explained your product very well to the customers, but did they understand it or were they quite overwhelmed?
No, we did too many mistakes, because what we did, like, we came from the company that has like, just think about Starbucks. What they have this, they teach you how to make a customer service, how to sell a sandwich with a coffee, how to sell bigger coffee, how to do that, which coffee is sweeter, which is less sweet, and that's the company we were working in. And because we wanted to do the stuff our own way, so like, different coffees, black coffees, we don't sell syrups with coffee and all that stuff. And we went like from being totally black to totally white. So we should be somewhere in between. And in 2012 in Poland, telling people that when there was the chains were getting like the most popularity, and there was a Starbucks coming, and everybody was drinking caramel macchiato or white chocolate mocha, we were saying no to the syrups, and we didn't explain why. We just say no, that's it. We were doing everything like too strict at the certain point, and people
Yeah,
didn't want to
because
listen. So we had
yeah,
our
sorry, because I guess I
yeah
mean
go on.
a 2012 you said is also super super early compared to Germany. I think Germany the whole black wave came like maybe 2016. So it's 4 years later where people start understanding it. And yeah, that's the biggest discussion in I think every country, how to communicate this system. And by now we all have realized and understand that we have to gently take our customers by the hand
Yeah, and we were just like this is the coffee you should drink, and that's it. And we were like that. We were like super strict. And we had some people that really liked good coffee, but they didn't like us because we were like too much into the mission, and the customer service sucks totally. Like it sucks for general customer. Like for some freaks, it was pretty okay. But the first 2 years, we were just struggling. We were like in a totally wrong place. It's like you have a coffee shop just to spend money, because this is you're gonna like the we were thinking that the coffee shop doesn't have to bring money, that this is just like our toy and we can do whatever we want. And it took us to realize that we did something wrong, and if we wanna survive and we're gonna like keep having it, we have to change something. And this was the moment when we started to be less strict, and we started to be more into customer service, like explaining, like in a not, maybe not in a very detailed way, but more into like a nice way, like friendly way, why this coffee tastes in a different way than the other. So like it was a struggle at the beginning, a big struggle, but we
So
survived.
you did, like, this experience did change the way that you communicated coffee in general with customers, right?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
And you had this shop for 5 years, and your role in the business was, if I research correct, it wasn't the easiest role that you had, because you had to manage the staff and you had to do all of the boring office stuff, and you had to be, well, let's say you had to be the strict one. Which I find quite interesting, because I have been in my past coffee adventures in similar situation, and it shows how working in a coffee shop isn't always just standing behind the machine and having happy chats with customers. But did you, and obviously this made you learn like this in this time you learn a lot about how to manage a shop. But were you actually sometimes annoyed about your position in this shop, that you always had to be the strict one, that you sometimes had to like tell people off?
But yeah, like the it was like starting when the coffee shop, I was still like the my business partner and the guy from Latter, he's like the showman, so he's the front man in a rock band, and I was the other one that was more like I was making sure that we play the music that he's actually singing to. So at the beginning it was super fun and super good for me, because he was doing all the marketing. He was, being this, the main face of the brand, and this was okay because I could just as my duty was to just make a good coffee, make good latte art and the quality, and then just make sure that we have enough coffee, enough milk, enough everything. At the beginning it was okay. We didn't have like a lot of customers. We didn't have a lot of staff. And the roles were pretty much clear, but the thing is that in 2012 he stopped competing and I kept competing, and at certain point I started to win, and there was this problem that people started to come to the place to see me because I was a Polish latte champion or a Polish barista champion, so I kind of needed to be a little bit the face. And the business behind it was still on my head, so we didn't switch the roles. I was getting just more jobs to do, and at this time we had a lot of stuff, and they were really thinking, because we were very popular because of the titles I was getting. So the kids they were working, they were like, okay, so this is super fun. I'm working in a fancy place, in a specialty coffee, and this is like, it's super cool to make fancy coffees all the day. And I was like, yeah, but this is dirty, and this is, and I was, and this was getting a pain in the ass, that I was the pain in the ass, because I was walking and telling them, so this is dirty, you have to clean it. This is dirty, you have to clean it. You have to carry these. You have to wash the dishes. You have to do that. And I was getting, what was annoying me, that I was getting like the bad policeman, and he was like the good daddy at certain point, and there was no balance. I was always the bad one, and I was working twice as much as I used to, because I needed to have those shifts behind the bar, and I needed to do the office job, because people wanted to have coffee from me, and I was the one all the time responsible for the invoices and the orders. So nobody was getting nobody was balancing it, and he didn't want to give up his frontman role. So we had those issues with the people coming to a coffee shop asking if there is this lady champion, and he was like, "No, I am here." So it was a pretty tricky last year, especially that 2016 was annoying
I
and
think it, yeah, I think it
exhausting, I
escalated
could
to the
say.
point where he did say that you either you compete or you stay in the shop, right? And I think yeah, and you've done a
Exactly.
very bold move by saying, "All right, I want to compete, so I'm going to leave the shop," which is yeah, very scary because it means you're not having any income from that time, or being a freelancer. Was it an easy decision for you? Were you just like, you know what, I'm stubborn, I'm gonna do it. I know I'm good, so I can survive it. Or where was it very hard for you? Because it's also like obviously a shop that you build.
Well, I saw already like 2015, 2016 that the way that we wanted to keep this place going, we had like totally two different visions because of me competing and being a champion. There was like I felt that there is a bigger responsibility and bigger need that we go the quality way. Like we just gonna be like better coffees. We're gonna be a little bit more strict with the quality, so to make sure that we deliver the champion level coffee for the people. And he was going more into funky way and just make it like a very relaxed way. Selling coffees that are like maybe not the best quality, but we're gonna be the cool people and people will come for the cool people. So we got like the vision was a little bit different at certain point, and I was scared to leave, but I felt like this decision was like coming. It took me, I think, 6 months to finally decide. I don't remember actually what happened, but I know that there was one thing that happened that I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm leaving. That's it. So this was something like that happened, but I don't remember what it was. The biggest scary thing for me was that I already had my own company for some of the contracts outside of the coffee shop, and I was like, so I'm gonna leave in December and I'm not gonna have the salary, and I have to pay the rent, and I have to pay the car, and I have to pay the taxes. So the scary part was that I'm losing this, safe background. I don't know if I'm gonna survive, or after that, if I don't have to go back to like you know chain like a chain coffee shop, or maybe I'll have to switch the industry. I was pretty scared of what's the future gonna be like, but it turned out pretty okay.
Yeah, because in this situation with not having a full-time job, you financed your life and your competitions mainly by giving trainings and consulting. And at one time, you had 71 days straight training, including travel. So you in this 71 days, every day you had to train people and you had to travel to the places. And you are also still preparing or competing. And I know from my competitions that I've had that this is by far the most stressful experience that I could ever have. And then training others on top of that is like I can only tell from my own experience, is very energy draining because I obviously want to give the best training that they've had so that they can recommend me. So you do put up quite a show to make them happy. And my question now is, how do you manage living this intense lifestyle for so long? Because it's been so many years since you've been doing it, and do you have anything that balances you out?
I can tell you that I have no idea how I survived it. I have no idea. I think it was just like, from day to day. And when I was almost dead and done, there was happening something that just keep me going, or I was having like a day off, or I was having like a nice meeting with a friend, like something that just keeps you going. But the 71 days happened just before Christmas. So I was working up till 22nd, I think, of December. And then I went home to my parents, which wasn't the best possible. No, I didn't go
You
home
went
to
to
my
your
parents. We
brother,
were actually
right?
driving with my parents. Yeah, we were going to my brother to Switzerland, so we needed to drive for 10 hours. And there was, small kids, so it's like it's never a relax when you're having a family time, because I would much more prefer to stay in my place and watch Netflix or just doing nothing. But in the end, I think it was just not thinking about coffee and just being like having those conversations about nothing, just put my battery back up. But I think that the worst was the year after WBC, the first 12 months, up till maybe not 12, it was up to Boston, so it was 9. Because traveling around Poland is easy, but if you have to travel around the world with changing the time zones, this was I think that this was the most exhausting thing, and I don't know how I survived it. At certain point, I just had those stuff in the calendar, and I knew I cannot say no, or I cannot cancel them. So I just kept going. But I don't know how I did it. There is no secret behind it, or I was just like ticking boxes to the stuff I needed to do, and I just knew that it's like at certain point it's gonna end, and I just have to survive it, and there will be this time when I will be able to rest finally. So I have no idea how I survived.
I will definitely pick that up a little bit later because I think that's a very, very interesting topic. But I do have a question before that because at the start I've said how many prizes you won, and it is so incredible. And everyone always sees how many things you won, but to actually get there, you had to compete a lot, and you also had to not win. And before you competed in Amsterdam, you already competed in the WBC twice, and both times you've placed 34th. And it's quite impressive. It's 34th and then 34th and then first. And
Believe me, I was the most surprised one.
well, what was the thing? Because during all of these years, you obviously also didn't win. What was the thing that kept you going? Because for a lot of people, that would have been quite discouraging. Was there something that really?
When I was losing, because at a certain point you're constantly losing, so the first 2 weeks after the comp, this is it. I'm never doing it again. I don't like being on stage. It's too stressful. I'm like too tired, and my body just doesn't like it. And it doesn't give me it doesn't give me the satisfaction of winning. So maybe I'm not good enough. So it was always the first 2 weeks after competition was like that. Sometimes even up to month. But then I was always the competitive kid. So I was losing this kind of a sporty thing of competing, competing against somebody and trying to get over your weaknesses. And I've always learned so much during preparation for those competitions that I was missing the learning experience I'm getting on the way. So I just felt that, I was a freelance already when I was doing the second. No, no. When I was almost a freelance when I was doing the second WBC, and the thing is that you're doing a lot of those basic trainings when you tell people that this is coffee, this is Arabica, this is Robusta. Before coffee was roasted, it was green, and it's a very basic thing for all of us coffee professionals. And if you do like 70 trainings like that in a year, 70, maybe even 100, you're just kind of getting this feeling that you're going back with your own knowledge and your own skills, that you're not learning anything new, and you just keep repeating the stuff that you know for 10 years, and you're not even checking if it's still true or not. So I think that the thing that kept me going was trying to be up to date with the knowledge and up to date with the trends. And this was always kind of a motivation to have the deadline. There is a date of competition. And up to this date, I have to master a pattern. I have to master a skill. I have to get the coffee and to master a presentation, something. It was kind of a motivation that allows me to develop my own skills. But of course, on the way, I always, like once or two, twice a week, I got this feeling that I should stop. This is not getting me anywhere. The losing thing is,
Hard.
is I'm always sad and angry. Yes, I'm always sad and angry when I lose, but I think that the people around me just are able to get the feeling again. The worst was Dublin. The 34th place in Dublin was a crash. I almost didn't compete ever again after Dublin.
I can absolutely, understand, because when I competed in 2019 in Barista, I placed third, and I was also crushed. And I remember I was sitting in the hotel bar and got quite drunk. And being super drunk, I just said to my bosses, "I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to compete in something else. What else is there?" And then I said, "You know what? I'm going to compete in Coffee and Good Spirits. I don't care." So that was the start of that. So sometimes losing does help you, but especially this year when you've had this a couple of times. You traveled in a quite early age to competitions, and you realized how hard it is to travel to another country. Your first World Latte Art Championship was in Australia, right? So you traveled to Australia. The day later was your competition, and then 4 days later you already traveled back, and then there was your next competition waiting for you in Poland, which also is very, very insane. But this year was the first time for me that I traveled for a national competition, because I'm currently in Australia and I had to travel to Germany with all my gear, with so much uncertainty if everything arrives properly, and then really tried everything to be perfect, to absolutely be perfect on the day, and did my routine and just went out I didn't win. And I was like, I've never invested so much time and so much money and so much everything into a competition and didn't win. And it is so hard to crawl out of this hole and to recover, that I think everyone has their own motivation to get out of it. When you compete, do you compete to win, or do you compete to learn?
It will be very unfair if you say that you compete and you don't want to win. And everybody who's saying that he's competing just to have fun and have the it's always a little bit of a lie in that. Like everybody who's competing, everybody wants to win. But like it's that's why you're competing. If you just want to compete to learn, you don't have to compete. There is always this, there's depending on the competition, there is always the level that I want to reach. WBC in Amsterdam, it was a semi-final. I wanted to be in a semi-final. That was the highest thing, and the lowest was 33 for me. I really wanted to be 33 to prove myself that I can improve. But WBC for me was always such a big mystery and such a complicated competition that, like, winning it, somebody from Eastern Europe and Poland, country in the middle of Russia, if a lot of people believe. There was like no way that such a person can win, especially that I didn't have a lot of money invested in that, and I didn't have a big company, a part of Ona giving me coffee. I didn't have a lot of a big company behind me that will allow me to train. I needed to work. I needed to practice. I needed to buy everything by myself. So there was no way with such a small investment I could be in a top 10. In latter art, I was more into. I really had expectations for Brazil, but Brazil was supposed to be my main focus in 2018, and I really wanted to practice for that. But then I won WBC, and I couldn't practice because I was traveling all the time.
It's still
So final
placed
was.
still placed in the finals.
Yeah,
which is
this is pretty
insane
good.
because I find latte art is something that I'll never understand, never get, never be able to do because it's, yeah, there's so many good people.
And you have to be a little bit autistic to make a good latte art. It's like it's like, like it's not like those like those mathematic genius when they just see the numbers and they just know how to solve the equation. So this is with latte art. You have to understand the process instead of just making moves. And the better you understand the like you have to kind of feel like the milk, and you have to be able to be the milk for a while to understand it, which is pretty lame when you say it, but like yeah, you have to be the milk to be good in latte art.
And
So
maybe to put that in more realistic words for our listeners, you did say one time that you have to repeat a pattern, one pattern, up to 10,000 times before you can enter the level of the
yes.
WBC, which is wow.
Yeah, like it's just like when you think about it, there is one simple reason to do that. Your head cannot be working on stage. Your muscles have to be working on stage. So you have to learn your muscles the exact movements that you want to have on stage. So you don't have to use your head and think what's next. So your hand is working without the connection to a brain, because brain is already thinking how not to sweat and where to put the cup. Like brain is thinking about something else, and the hand have to do the work. So, well, yes, the very first competition I did was purely to win. But when I was like growing up as a competitor, a part of having a good result in a competition, I was kind of putting a line, what would be a success for me and what would be a big defeat for me. So maybe having the first place in the world stage is not always the biggest goal, but I'm just trying to put for myself a certain levels to prove that I developed something in my skills and in my knowledge. So there is sometimes like being six is a win, and sometimes being six is a loss. So depending on the competition, I just try to put the winning level for myself.
I think I've came across the thought that I had in my head that I'm constantly competing and not seeing that I could win, especially last year when we competed together in Coffee and Good Spirits. And then I shifted my main goal on the competitions that I do nowadays to just give a great show so that people actually enjoy watching and that people get inspired. I think that's the thing that drives me every time back on stage to be like, you know what? I've researched this, I learned this. I think it's really entertaining, it's really cool. I want to show it to you. I have no idea if the judges are going to like it or not because you never know.
No, like with judges are totally like one of the big question marks in a
Big,
competition. You
big,
can
big,
have the
yeah.
best present, you can have the best presentation ever, and you can see you can see it with the examples of like Ben Put, and he's giving a lot of knowledge in those presentations, and he never won because he didn't actually meet the demand of the year. And there's always like this uncertain thing that if this is not the right trend of the year, you're not gonna win. And he's always missing the trend like just slightly, and this is a big loss for I think for the WBC that he never won it because he totally deserved it.
Just for a couple of our listeners, Ben Putt is a Canadian competitor who, is he the competitor that has been in the most WBC finals?
He has been there 3 times,
Three? Okay.
so I don't think he,
That's not
I
the
don't think it's the
most,
most,
no, but very consistent in the finals. Yeah.
He was third in Seattle 2015. I think he was fourth in Seoul in 2017, and I think he was also third in 2016.
I'm not quite sure now about the exact range, but he's,
I
yeah.
think he was twice third and one fourth. So he was in the top six like for many, many times.
Which is a big, big achievement. Like a lot of people never make it there.
Yes.
Okay. after you won the WBC in 2018 in Amsterdam, I think one of the biggest topics after this competition was like, oh my God, a first ever female barista champion. And
Yes.
I do want to tell a little bit story of that about that because every time I visit world championships, like I've been to Dublin, I've been to Amsterdam, I've been to Boston, and every time my main goal is to watch every single competitor. So I sit down on these incredibly uncomfortable chairs for eight. Oh God, Dublin was the worst. My ass was hurting so much afterwards. And I do watch every single competitor. And if you watch so many competitors and so many routines from so many countries, there's only very, very, very few that stay in your head and that really impress you. And I remember when I was in Amsterdam, I was watching your semifinals, and I was directly behind you, and it was quite a thing that happened with me there because I felt so connected when you were talking that my heart really started racing. I started sweating, and I was absolutely amazed about how much I'm feeling whilst you are doing your routine. I was like, I don't even know this woman, like, and I'm so like into this, and this developed to the point like when you came close to the end of your routine, it was like, I want this person to win. I really want this person to win. And then when you were on at the finals, I stood at the Polish corner, where, and you had,
Polish
oh,
corner, that's a good name.
you had great fans of you, and it was such a atmosphere in this corner. And I was standing there, and everyone was cheering, and I had goosebumps. And it was such a powerful moment that day, especially when you got announced a winner. That I felt that this situation or this moment affected me personally so much that you won, and that also that you were the first ever woman and blah blah blah. I mean, you've heard it a million times. So it did make a big impact on myself that I was like, I really want to compete again as well. But I think you yourself think that this female factor has been made too much of a big deal, and that you're not actually, that your goal was never to be an advocate for women at this stage. And behind the scenes, you also say, or behind backstage, you say, everyone is equal, and it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, because everyone gets treated the same way. So how did it feel for you afterwards to be put in this box, to be the first ever woman who made it, and how do you see yourself? How is it for you to be a role model in this perspective?
Well, you know that you already know that the goal for Amsterdam was to be 33. So I believed, and this was like very, very deep in my head that I'm not gonna win. And the second thing is like I'm definitely not the right person to make a history. I was like, I just feel, still feel like like a coffee kid. I'm just like a kid that kind of just enjoy coffee. And I saw so many better role models in that position, like Miki Suzuki, Andrea Allen, Charlotte Malaval. There was so many better person on to be in that position. And so the moment when it actually happened, and then when I realized that doesn't matter what's gonna happen, I will always have this title, and I will always be the first ever women to win. And a lot of people were, especially in interviews just right after, it felt like me being a woman is bigger than me winning the World Barista Championship. So like they were making the in the end of the day, the success of winning this competition was much smaller thing than
Then your
me being a
agenda,
woman.
yeah.
It's,
Because I
yeah.
remember even when you got the trophy, the person who announced who is second and who is first, it's like she announced you by, and the first ever woman winning the world championship is Agnieszka. Like that was the words that you got
Yes.
introduced in being a world champion, which is, yeah, pretty
Like
determined.
no, it's and I was getting it a lot that you're like changing the history, and now you're like this role model and everything. And I believe that there is a lot of bigger role models, like on the farms and running a big companies, and we don't talk about those women that are actually making the big difference. I just won a competition. It's just like winning a video game. And because it's pretty popular thing, so people believe that now I have the power to change stuff. But basically, there are so many more powerful women and women that shape that industry into what it is now. Like you have the president of SCA now is a woman, and the president of SCA before her was also a woman. A woman, and there's like a lot of producers that are changing the producing country, and in charge of a lot of companies that are importing or roasting, like for example, even Andrea Allen, she's running one of the most successful and one of the best roasteries in the United States, and they are shaping the industry. What I just showed by winning this competition, and I didn't even mean to do that, was that it is possible, because we started to be in this like a black box of a woman cannot, like we started to like put a curse on it, on this competition, that a woman cannot win it. We can, but there is always fewer women competing than the men. Like if there is 20% of competitors are girls, like the probability of winning it by a girl is just smaller. It's just pure mathematics. And I felt that at certain point they believe that I have like a superpower or anything like that, which doesn't happen, but I'm happy that I was the one that broke the spell. That starting from that moment, a lot of girls were feeling that okay, it is possible, so I want to keep competing. That there is no this anger that this is a male industry or anything like that. It just broke the spell and just give a little bit more confidence to every girl in the industry that is actually competing or working, that it's not a male industry.
For all the listeners, I'm very sorry. We just had a little bit of an internet connection problem, but we're going to dive right back about Agnieszka kind of like breaking the spell that was on female baristas before that. And then a lot of other big names followed her. And by now, a lot of, world champion titles are owned by women. But what I can remember is when we were both competing in Coffee and Good Spirits, in this whole world competition, there was also only three women competing.
Yes,
And
not a lot of them. And this is the only competition that wasn't won by a woman yet.
that is true, but we're working on it, I think.
Yes, we're working on
But yeah, the thing that I also always like to say to young women especially is like, there's nothing that is stopping us. There's no criteria that says in the application form for the competitions that you have to be male or you have to be a woman. None of this is reality. So everyone can compete, and I can only encourage people to do so. And I think that's the same position where you are at. You didn't choose to be a special ambassador for women in this industry, but what you are a role model for is for equality. You are the proof that anyone can do it, and that it doesn't mean just because you're a woman you can't.
Like there's nothing that holds back anybody. So whoever you are, just, and if you want to compete, just do it. The big thing is like, if you compete for the first time, do it without the expectation, and then just keep pushing. Because like having too big expectation at the beginning might show you that it's a very difficult thing, but only because you're a newcomer, and it's always more difficult for newcomers.
All right. Maybe I can step forward to my next question, which we've already kind of like discussed earlier a little bit. I read an article about you after the WBC, and you said in this article that after you win, you gain a life and you lose a life. We've already talked about this before, and I already read this about other world champions, and they talk about how hard it is on their private lives. I'm guessing it isn't very easy to be in your position, and did obviously winning did have a big impact on your private life, but is it being a world champion, is it a gift or a curse?
I think it's a gift. It's more of a gift than a curse, and because it's like having this title is one big opportunity, and it's only up to the person that won it how she or he will use it. And for me, it was of course I lost spending a lot of time at home and doing a lot of basic trainings. Having weekends out or anything like that, but what I gain is like international network of people in the coffee industry and friends, and I get access to bigger knowledge, and I have access to other communities, and being able to travel all the time is also a cool thing. And then it's being a World Barista Champion is a great opportunity to develop. Not only friendship, but also to get to know yourself as a person. And what you actually want from life. So this is just a big opportunity. And of course, it's at the beginning you really want to do everything, every single email that comes and invites you to different places in the world. And I haven't been there, and I haven't been there. And you just want to do everything, and it's impossible. So you might be a little bit tired, but I was talking to the new champion from South Korea. There is this, not a lot of people know about it, but the moment you win, basically the previous champion is kind of reaching out to you with this encouraging messages, and they all the previous World Barista Champions kind of support you, especially at the very beginning, with this kind of a mentorship. And she was I of course wrote her a message, and she was pretty scared of what she have to do now, what she's supposed to do, where she's supposed to go. And I just told her that the only thing that this title gives you is the opportunity and a chance to go into a path that you maybe could never do before. So there is nothing you have to do. There are only the things that you can do, and that's the best thing
Because
about it.
I'm guessing you get so overwhelmed that you kind of like lose where's up and where's down, or what am I doing? So I've heard about these calls that you, once you win the championship, you get a call.
Yes. Not only one, I can tell you that.
And most people see the competitors and the champions, and they only think of the individual success. But as we know, behind the scenes and backstage, there are teams of people, and there's lots of people helping. And I remember in Amsterdam, you had, I think it was Paula and Camilla, and your dad who helped you for the WBC routine. And I want to ask, how important are those people, and how important have they been for your success?
Well, the thing is that those are people that do most of the dirty work, and they just if you have a good team that does all the small things like doing dishes and like packing and cleaning, you can focus on the main things. Like you can stay calm, and you can focus on the routine. You can focus on the speech. You can focus on the coffee itself. And for me, Paula is with the team since 2016. So we're working on a competition from 2016, and she kind of knows me better than I know myself. So she knows when I'm angry. She knows how to treat me, that when I have to eat, when I have to go to the bathroom. So she's kind of a lifesaver when there is a backstage thing. Camila was helping me in 2018 because I knew the WBC is too much work for Paula, but of course Paula was sure that she will be able to do everything on her own, and I was like, no, you need a helper. And Camila is very humble, so whatever job you're gonna give her, she's just gonna do it quickly and very efficient, and you don't have to like keep saying it twice or three times. And then the thing is that the better team you have on backstage, the more you can focus on what's going to be on stage. So you can
And you did support. You give your support in both directions, I would say, because you also helped Camilla, I think, to prepare
Yes,
for
yes.
Brewers Cup, and she placed an amazing
Yeah.
place. She came became runners up in Brewers Cup in Poland, which is so hard. But
No,
she
she
won
won
it. Oh
it.
my God.
Yeah, this was the Brewers Cup. I was supposed to compete, but her coffee didn't arrive, and I already won WBC, so I gave her my coffee and I showed her more or less how to build a routine, and she won it a week after helping me in
Oh
Amsterdam.
wow. And that was very bad research for me, but it's so incredibly hard to win Polish Brewers Cup. Because
Yes, I noticed that this year I came fourth this year, so I know how it
Wow.
is.
So you could also at the same time help the people that helped you in other years, which is great support, I think, in this part.
Yeah, I know that I'm a very under stress. I could be very bitchy, so I try to be I try to reward the people that are with me as much as possible. So I pay the trip, I pay the accommodation. If they want ice creams, I just bring ice creams. So they actually feel a little bit rewarded during those hard 3 days. Or 4 days, depending on the competition. So you have to take care of your team, so they will take care of you. It's I think a win-win position for
And you
that.
mentioned Brewers Cup. You competed this year in Brewers Cup, right?
Yes,
And at the start
yes.
of this year, I mean, you already competed, and I've been competing as well, and I've been preparing myself for the Coffee Good Spirits Championship, and unfortunately, everything is postponed in the moment. And now, with this situation that everything is postponed, I personally can't compete this year, and I guess, but mainly for me because it's too expensive. And as a full-time competitor and a trainer for you, all of your opportunities in the moment have been put on ice. So what are
Yes.
you doing in the moment? Are you just constantly going into the cellars preparing for competitions or
No. I was lucky enough that the last year I got the proposition from Italy, from Carimali Company, to join the team as a full-time consultant. And we're working on a new espresso machine technology, and also we're going to work on some milk systems and grinding systems. So starting from beginning of this year, I kind of have a full-time job, which is not like a regular office job. So I do some work for them. I decided that it's a good time after 1.5 year of constant traveling to settle down a little
And I
bit.
guess it was the best decision you could have
So
done in this year.
yes, I was like in March when everything started happening in Poland, I was like, yeah, this is I now I'm super lucky because all the trips I was supposed to be back from Australia now because it was supposed to be WBC last week, and I was supposed to be flying to Kenya next week, and everything is cancelled. So joining a bit nice company was one of the best things that actually happened to me. But also the big break. It's kind of make me rethink if I will compete again.
Me too, actually. It's quite hard in the moment to
Yeah.
really see where your focus is. The only thing that I know is that I do want to do Coffee Good Spirits, and I think you also do want to Coffee Good Spirits because it's such a fun
Yeah.
competition. Or am I just assuming it? I just know that I
Yeah,
really want to
but
do it, even if it's next year.
yeah, that's I really wanted to do it this year if it's going to be Warsaw, because
Obviously, yeah.
it's in Poland, so it was always
Home
a
game.
but if it doesn't happen, or it's if it doesn't happen, it's still okay. I'm kind of enjoying the a little bit of stable life right now, so it's pretty unusual for me. So it actually made me rethink if I will ever compete, because maybe I will just give up. Like, maybe not
It's
give up, maybe
yeah,
I'll
I want
just
to say
retire. Maybe
it's
it's
definitely
time.
not giving up in your case. I think you've proven yourself that you have achieved many, many titles, which is good for me to know. All right, Agnieszka, I do have one final question. This question is a little bit
Yeah.
more for the format of my podcast, as it is a podcast that's called She's the Barista. So this question is a little bit more targeted on that. And it is, do you have a female role model, or do you have a woman in your life that has inspired you to become the person that you are?
You know that I have a woman in my life that actually formed the person that I am today, which is of course my mom, because she was always supporting my decision, and she was always this person that maybe not questioning but double checking if I'm sure this is the best decision, and then she was always supporting me and taking care of me. And I believe that she was the most scared when I was going to have the coffee shop, because she always, wanted me to have a good job, safe life and everything. But now she's more up to date with the competitions that I am, so she watched all of them. But I forbid her to go and see it live. So she and my dad are one of the greatest supports. But I was always admiring Miki Suzuki as a barista. She was, I think she was the first presentation. I don't remember the year now, but she was in the final. It was somewhere in Europe, and I was really cheering that the two will actually win that
I
year.
mean, I think it
Like
was
she's
in
very,
Vienna.
she's no, she's very.
I think it could
Maybe,
it.
yeah,
Oh
I
no,
think
R
so.
Rimini. Huh? Is it that longer? No.
I know, no, Rimini, no, because Hide Izaki was winning in Rimini, and she's also
Ah,
from Japan, so it
true. That
couldn't be
couldn't
the
have been.
same year. Yeah, but I think it might be Vienna, or maybe it was even earlier than that. But this was the first time that I saw that somebody can be like so gentle and so knowledgeable and so, so professional on stage, and this was really amazing to see her competing. And I liked this other barista from the United States was Laila Gambari. She was supernatural in 2014 when she won for the first time in the United States, and she went for Rimini. She was just like a human on stage, and this is what I always enjoy and like to see, that you can be so natural when you compete and when you make coffee, and I just like the attitude of being a natural barista on stage, which I thought that at the time was impossible.
And I think also when we talk about Mickey, it is a lot of the times. I mean, you do it, I do it, a lot of people do it. But it is impressive how, as a non-native person, we do all of those routines in English. And especially with Mickey, she got a speech trainer and she's like so committed to everything. And there's so many competitors that just learn word for word. And yeah, it is impressive how much commitment goes into it. And I know that every year I'm standing in front of this text and I'm like, oh my God, how do I say it? And it is so hard to just get it into my brain. Oh.
I'm sorry to say that, but we're getting older, and I think that the capacity of our brains are getting smaller
So
for
true.
that.
Oh my God. Oh. Yeah, I was
Yeah.
devastated when I found out that we're the same age because I'm like, oh my God, she's achieved so much more than me.
Well, it's but I still believe it was so much luck in Amsterdam that because like everything, when you think about that routine, it wasn't very scientific. It wasn't talking about the new varietals. It wasn't talking about new processing. It was like there was nothing like crazy in a way of a breakthrough for the industry. It was just going so much to basics of where we come from that I really thought it's too
Yeah,
simple to
but what you
create.
had in this year and in this routine is exactly what we talked about before with Ben Pod. You've had the trend in your advantage. You've had the goosebumps of everyone in the room, and I'm guessing that the judges felt that as well, and you just hit the exact note
The spot.
that was with like that was needed for this competition. And to be honest, everyone who comes to the finals in the World Barista Championship, like they all deserve to win. They're all equally as good as another.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, Agnieszka, that was
Nicole.
so good. That was such a long chat, and I'm so happy about everything you told me. But I do think we are hitting the 1.5 hour mark. So, is there anything else that you would like to say to my listeners or?
Well, to all the listeners of your podcast, you should watch out, Nicole, because she might be the next World Coffee Enthusiast and World Barista Champion. So listen carefully what she's talking about, and know that she's doing those interviews to get, the secret knowledge of being the best competitor ever. So watch out for Nicole in the future.
That's the plan. That's the whole plan. Damn it. Oh God. Agnieszka, thank you so much for being on the show, and I wish you a wonderful day. I'm just going to say a couple of more things to my
Thank you.
listeners, and
Yes, of course.
yeah, all I have to say now is goodbye.
Yeah, bye. Thank you.
1 inspiring and honest conversation with such an incredible person. Not only a world champion and multiple world finalist, but also so incredibly down to earth. We can take a lot away from Agnieszka's experiences and stories. Success isn't a straight path. We can have many careers, successes and failures, all of which give us experiences so that we can seek what we are passionate about. When you work hard for something, people usually only see the end result, and it is so important to have clear goals and to be sure what you believe in. And the future of women in coffee is bright. It isn't just about elevating women, but considering everyone as equal in the goal to create better coffee. If you have any questions or suggestions for guests, send me a message via nicolebutterfeld.com/podcast. Until the next time, thanks so much for listening to She's the Barista.